Well, all right, here we go with the second half. Let's dive into how awareness and curiosity create the power to change and heal. So, all of our stuckness comes from judgment. We stay stuck because we judge, and we judge because we are attached. We're attached to a story, an outcome, a belief, an identity, an ideology, a whatever. That's why we're stuck. We're attached. Unless we are aware of our attachments and our judgments and can meet those attachments and judgments with non-judgmental, neutral curiosity, we will continue to repeat patterns and stay stuck. Deb Dana is a polyvagal theory teacher. This is one of my favorite quotes of hers. She says, "Behaviors are manifestations of our internal nervous systems taking actions in the service of survival. People develop habits and early adaptive survival responses, and these habits naturally continue into adulthood." When we can recognize, oh, I haven't shared my slides yet. Sorry, you guys. David just came in here and told me. There. When we can recognize how these responses once served a person by helping them tolerate otherwise seemingly unbearable circumstances, we are able to cultivate a sense of appreciation for how an individual has survived, adapted, and learned through the difficult experiences and predicaments of their life. So the parts of this that I want to highlight for you are internal nervous systems taking action in the service of survival, which develops habits that are early adaptive survival responses, and those naturally continue into adulthood. And those once served us by helping us tolerate otherwise unbearable circumstances, whether that was your childhood, an abusive relationship, a hard time at school, whatever it was, whatever you adapted to do to try to feel safe when you felt threatened became an adaptation, and it became like part of your what you think is your personality, but it's really not. It's an adaptation that you put on to survive. And that's why earlier I was saying that, the difference in judgment of being like, oh, look at her. Can you believe she did that? Versus, oh, yeah, in the context of her life experiences, her behavior makes sense. That honors the adaptive pattern that was developed to get through otherwise seemingly unbearable circumstances that whoever she is may not be in awareness of yet. Right. And so there's no reason to judge her harshly. Otherwise, we ourselves deserve to be judged harshly because we all do that. So that's what that means. Eckhart Tolle says, "Most people are so completely identified with the voice in the head, the incessant stream of involuntary and compulsive thinking and the emotions that accompany it. As long as you are completely unaware of this, you take the thinker to be who you are. This is the egoic mind. We call it egoic because there is a sense of self, of I, ego, in every opinion, viewpoint, reaction, emotion. This is unconsciousness, spiritually speaking. Your thinking is, of course, conditioned by your past, your upbringing, your culture, your family background, and so on. So we have to be willing to examine and question everything about ourselves with curiosity and not judgment." A couple of questions that can help you with that. What purpose does it serve to? Da, 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 da. Isn't it interesting that I feel this kind of way about what this person just did? Okay, curiosity instead of judgment. So I'd like to ask you to just think about what have you noticed about yourself lately? If you want to put it in the chat, you can. I can open the chat and look. If you want to just think about it to yourself, you can do that. But I'd love to know what you've noticed about yourself lately. And I think I have to stop sharing because Zoom's latest update won't let me share my screen and look at the chat at the same time, which is very annoying. Okay. I think some of you are typing in the chat, so I'm going to wait. Just what have you noticed about yourself lately? Tammy says detachment and dissociation in high stress situations. Yep, subconscious behavior patterns. Nicole says both wanting to dive deeply into grief and run away from it. Carrie's feeling hypervigilant, type A, empathic, perfectionist. Okay. All right. Thank you for sharing, by the way. That is lovely. For those of you who did not share, or for those of you who did share, notice if when you answered that question, your language tended toward judgment of yourself. And I would say some of you did not, it did not sound judgy, but maybe there might have been judgment in yourself for what you were sharing, even if I didn't read judgment in what you said. So, for example, let's say the thing that you are noticing about yourself lately is that you missed a deadline. Okay. So judgment would sound like, of course you miss the deadline. You always miss deadlines. You're always late for everything, right? Judgment loves to use always and never statements like a lot. But curiosity would sound like, isn't it interesting that I miss this deadline? I wonder what is contributing to my missing this deadline. I wonder what I need to choose to meet deadlines. Like, that's so much more spacious than, of course you miss the deadline. You're always late for everything. Like, this is so much more spacious. You are not going to figure out what makes you late for everything from this place. You will not get there, period. You will get closer if you come from this place. Isn't it interesting? I wonder what's contributing to this. Do you see how suddenly so many options become available to you? Like changing your schedule, scheduling meetings at a different time, asking for an extension on the deadline. Like you could think of all of these different things in the space of curiosity that could be helpful to your process of shifting the pattern of being late for everything. Or you can judge yourself and shame yourself and make absolutely no progress whatsoever. This is the difference between judgment and curiosity. So here are some curiosity questions that can help you as you're learning to practice this with yourself. Isn't it interesting that whatever? So if you would normally say something like, shit, I did it again. No. Isn't it interesting that I just repeated this thing again? Curious. Yes. What purpose does this serve? The ego loves to answer this question with the easy answer, which is, oh, it doesn't serve a purpose, so I just won't do it anymore. No, that is not curious. Okay. What purpose does this serve will require you to really feel into, even if it's something really squirmy that bothers you, that you would rather not admit about yourself, you're gonna have to feel into what purpose it serves for you in order to have clarity about the pattern that's there and what's informing it. What meaning am I making out of this? What is the voice in my head saying? Is this actually a problem? Is there truth here? That can be a hard one to ask oneself. And when have I felt this way before? That can also help you in identifying patterns. So, judgment would say that all of these things on the left, grief, anger, shame, fear, depression, anxiety, pain, hopelessness, whatever, that that is all bad. And then judgment also then says, oh, but if you feel joy and peace and contentment and gratitude and optimistic and passionate and satisfied, that's good, right? That's judgment. Presence means you're noticing and feeling. Whether you're feeling shame or optimism, if you are present, you notice. But presence is not, oh, I feel optimism, that's good. Oh, I feel shame, that's bad. That's judgment. If you're in that energy, then you are judging that something is wrong. You're judging that there is a problem that you need to fix or something that you need to control, or you're in your head catastrophizing about something. That's not presence. Presence is just noticing and feeling. So we can be present with grief and shame and anger and disappointment and depression and anxiety and pain and all that. And also, we can be present with and not judge as good or bad joy and happiness and peace and excitement and gratitude and passion and satisfaction and hopefulness. So, presence is noticing and feeling, even if what you're feeling is fear, even if what you're feeling is judgment, even if what you're feeling is anger, even if what you're feeling is disappointment, even if what you're feeling is sadness. Presence. You're noticing it and you're feeling it. Okay. I'm going to let you guys in. If you're on a small device, you will not be able to read this. But the first time I posted a sensual movement video on Instagram, I got this comment right here, and you really can't read it. But what she wrote was, "Sexually awkward is just a difficult thing to watch." She also said that I looked like I needed practice and that I looked like cringe and awkward, like a baby giraffe learning how to stand. That was this person's assessment of the first time I posted a sensual movement video. So I screenshotted it. I sent it to my friend Chelsea, who's at Healing Embodied. And I said, so here's her comment that says, I look like cringy, like a baby giraffe. And I said, I blocked her, but this was a tough comment to read. Give it to me straight, though. Is it sexually awkward? Like, for real? Do I need more practice before I post these? Okay. And then I sent her more. So this person's like, long live dump truck asses and great personalities, right? And then this person is like, dump truck is right. So I was like, ooh, I am not prepared for the internet today. Then I said, I can tell I'm triggered by the first comment big time because I know the cringe sexual awkwardness she's talking about. And if that's me, I want to know now before I embarrass myself more. Yes, I'm learning and it's new, and it's okay for it to be new and to post it without being perfect. And I don't want to be cringy awkward. So then she's like, what the fuck? That is straight up mean. I get why you're hurt by that comment. Then she goes on to say some stuff in a voice note that I'm sorry I cannot extract for you because these are screenshots. And I said, I don't need to be perfect at it. I just need to not look cringe. It is fun to me and it's physically challenging. And Chelsea's like, what is the definition of cringe? That is a totally subjective judgment. And I said, yeah, I guess like when someone is trying too hard or their attempt at sexy was actually really awkward. Her comment was mean, I agree, but is there truth in it if we look past the meanness? Like, I'm like, oh, you precious little insecure Lindsay. And so then Chelsea's like, well, do you believe there's truth in it? And I was like, maybe. And she says, and if there were, what would be the problem? And I said, logically, I know there's no problem. And she says, what is wrong with being awkward? And I said, but I don't want to look like that. Fuck. Like, there was my judgment coming out. Because I judge it. I don't want to look like cringe, sexually awkward, because I judge women who look cringy and sexually awkward to me, right? So that's why I don't want to see it in myself. She's like, And I'm like, fuck, fuck. And she said, there it is. You just unlocked that for yourself. And I was like, why do I judge it? And she said, it's a weakness. I said, but I don't mind being new at it. The newness doesn't bother me. I'm proud of myself for trying. I don't expect it to be perfect, but something about it being sexually awkward and cringe is so ugh. I don't know if I see it as a weakness. And she said, be curious. And I think because I felt so sorry for awkwardly sexy girls before, like, oh honey, if you only knew. Like, there's my ooh, cringy judgment. That's gross, right? Oh honey, if you only knew. Like, that's so gross. I mean, I'm obviously judging myself now, but like, I feel like I can authentically be like, yeah, that's gross. I would not say that anymore. And she's like, what's gross? The awkwardness or the judgment? And I said, the judgment. And I said, to think that I get to decide that for someone else. And her willingness to risk being perceived as sexually awkward and cringe is really brave. So that was my like breakthrough with a friend. 10 out of 10 recommend getting friends like this. It really pays to have coach friends, okay? Because they get you through shit like this. And I said, I needed that. Thank you. You are literally like talking to myself. I mean that in the best way. This was right before we were going to run our good girl workshop. So she's like, every time we run this workshop, we get a taste of our own medicine. And I was like, Jesus, it's true. Cosmic spank. I was also tender because I had had a big fight with my friend. And then I like came in tender and read those comments. And then I second guessed all my choices for the entire day. It was a classic good girl trigger. So now let's look at something online that brings up all kinds of judgment and all kinds of responses in our bodies and just see how you can be curious. Okay. I don't know if I need to share my computer screen or sound with you. I think I might need to share my sound. Can I do that? At the same time as this. Okay, can you guys still see my screen, or can you only, you can't see the screen anymore? Okay. Then I will stop sharing my computer sound and hope that you can hear. No. Okay. I hope you can hear this. Zoom has done a big update since the last time I taught this workshop, and I do not like Zoom's new update. So hopefully you can hear it and see it, but here you go. Okay, that's it. Who felt uncomfortable? It's okay if you admit that you felt uncomfortable if you did. Okay, thanks, Danielle. Anyone else feel uncomfortable? Anyone else think, oh, that's cringe. That's sexually awkward. That was the video, by the way, that I got told I looked like a baby giraffe on. I mean, I can look at that now and go like, wow, I was a baby then. I'm such a better dancer now. Like, I really can say that about myself. I really am a better dancer now. Okay, so here's some of the comments that came on that post. I wouldn't ever post anything like that because I have young adult sons who would be mortified and surely receive a lot of crap from their peers. Okay. I feel like dancing seeing this video. I love your moves and the smooth flowy beats. What song is this? It's just the range of people. Like, I used to have this confidence until I was shamed by my partner. He later cheated on me 5 years down the line and left me. This has shattered my self-esteem. But yeah, watching you just makes me feel a longing to be that free again. Go ahead and dance away. My parts are my problem and solution. You go, girl. I love it. Used to make me uncomfortable too. I started to do it and post it till I was no longer uncomfortable. And ta-da, I gave no shits. I thought, damn. First of all, I'm impressed with your moves. My hips hurt just thinking about doing that. And your dancing is lovely. I do have a response to it, and it's really complex. There's a gut reaction of judging the dancing as dirty. And then I get into a trauma response and I start to feel shame and dissociate and/or have intrusive memories. I'm uncomfortable with the bad rendition of the chain. Amazing song choice. Okay. So, I'm showing you all of that to show you that literally all of those comments were judging in some way. Either people were judging that they really loved it, they loved the song choice, they couldn't believe my hips could move that way, or people are like, you look cringy and sexually awkward. I hate your song choice. My sons would be mortified if they saw this, whatever. Like, everyone judges. Everyone judges other people, everyone judges themselves. Judgment is a natural human behavior. So, no one needs to start feeling shame about how judgmental you all are. We are all judgmental. It's just part of being human. And judgment itself is neither good nor bad. So if you think that I've like had this underlying message this whole time of like nothing is good or bad, but judgment is good or bad because we're talking about it, no. Judgment, when we integrate that, it helps us decide what is good and what is bad for us, right? For me. Maybe dancing is not good for you, but it is for me. And that can be okay. And most of what we are choosing is good or bad for us is not absolute, but is relative to each person's perspective, nervous system state, conditioning, and whatever other personal factors. Here's a lovely quote from Ram Dass that I super love. Beyond all polarities, I am. Let the judgments and opinions of the mind be judgments and opinions of the mind, and you exist beyond that. Also, it's really time for you to see through the absurdity of your own predicament. You aren't who you thought you were. You just aren't that person. And in this very lifetime, you can know it right now. The real work you have to do is in the privacy of your own heart. All of the external forms are lovely, but the real work is your inner connection. If you're quiet when you meditate, if you truly open your heart, just quiet your mind, open your heart, quiet the mind, open the heart. How do you quiet the mind? You meditate. How do you open the heart? You start to love that which you can love and just keep expanding it. You love a tree, you love a river, you love a leaf, you love a flower, you love a cat, you love a human. Go deeper and deeper into that love. Can you love that which is the source of light behind all of it? Everything in you that you don't need, you can let go of. So, the source of our judgment, what we think is us but isn't us, surprise, you aren't who you thought you are, is the voice in our head that we unconsciously believe and identify with. Our unconsciousness originates in stories and fears. So, your nervous system is calibrated to the voice in your head, voices in your head. We have to be aware of these voices curiously if we're going to shift the patterns and conditioning, because no real or lasting change can come from shame. So, when you become aware of those voices, they might get louder. That's normal. Voices get louder and patterns often get more intense just before we have the breakthrough that shifts them. Really common thing that I see, sometimes not though. You are not the voice in your head because you can observe it. You can notice the meaning or the story that the voice in your head is trying to make out of the feelings and sensations. You can observe the feelings in your body that are triggered by believing those stories. When you realize that you're not the voice in your head, you set yourself free because you're not its puppet, unconsciously repeating the same old stuff because you never woke up to the voice's existence and your own ability to simply notice it. The stories we tell ourselves about the things are usually more harmful than the things themselves. So, the things, the story you tell yourself about the trigger, the story you tell yourself about how you can't set a boundary with that person because what if? The story you tell yourself about the symptom, the story you tell yourself about your relationship, the story you tell yourself about the sensation. Usually, the story is more harmful than the thing itself. The stories we tell ourselves about how we believe others perceive us. That we're too much, or we're not enough, or we're too loud, or too opinionated, or too reserved, or too rich, or too poor, or too fat, or too skinny, or too whatever, are much more harmful than what people are actually thinking of us. So, what you think people are thinking about you is probably worse than what people are actually thinking about you. People may be thinking judgmental things of us, but they're also in their own heads making judgments about themselves. So, most of us have been unconsciously operating based on these unnoticed and unquestioned stories and voices in our heads. And we have made big choices based on those voices. And often we made the choice that was safe, but not expansive, expected, but not desired by us, or inauthentic, but less risky. Anybody made a safe, but not expansive, expected, but not desired, and an inauthentic, but less risky choice out of authenticity? Okay. The voices are tricky because they are believable. We all have the life experiences to prove that what the voice in our heads say is really true, right? Like that's what makes it so difficult to repattern these things is because we can be like, yeah, but this actually happened to me. I have a reason to believe this to be true. I have a reason to expect this outcome. This actually has happened to me multiple times. So this is why awareness is non-negotiable. We have to be aware of these voices before we can question them or challenge them. And we usually have several voices in our heads. People say inner critic, inner judge. Sometimes that is like the only voice that's ever named in our head is the voice of the inner critic or the ego or something like that. It can typically be a bullying voice, though. It tells us that we're not enough, we're not worthy, we're not good enough, not skinny enough, not pleasing, like whatever. Everything we do is wrong, not perfect, have to be perfect, all that kind of stuff. But we have other voices too. And some voices are louder and more prevalent than others, and we're really familiar with those voices, and we often believe them to be our voice, but they're not. And some voices are pretty quiet and they only talk to us in certain instances, but usually we have a collection of like four or five voices in our heads that can be pretty loud and overbearing, at least a main two or three or four. So I'm going to teach you my version of parts work. This is what I call the bus exercise. One second, I need a drink. I'm kind of froggy. So, before I ever knew about IFS, Internal Family Systems Therapy, I downloaded this exercise, meaning like I received it as a visual image from source, from myself, to help my clients who were really struggling with the voices in their heads and their patterns to react unconsciously. And then I read IFS and was like, oh my God. This is the bus exercise, but it named all the parts. It's like firefighters and managers and shit. I don't name the parts that way. Sometimes you can spot those patterns for yourself, or I can spot them, but this is very, very basic parts work that I call the bus exercise. So if you were to imagine a school bus full of kids, Your highest self, soul, consciousness, whatever, is the bus driver of the bus. And all of the kids on the bus are also parts of you. So there might be a bully on your bus. There might be a people pleaser on the bus. There might be a sick kid on the bus, a perfectionist kid, an angry kid. I had one client who had a fat girl on her bus. I've had lots of different clients come up with all kinds of names for the different kids on their bus. These are some really common ones here, though. Sometimes when these kids are triggered, afraid, and they're trying to protect us, they try to drive the bus. But kids can't drive buses. It's dangerous. It's catastrophic. They're going to drive us off a cliff. We are not going to get to our destination safely if the kids are driving the bus, right? Only the higher self knows where we're going. Only the higher self has the map. Only the higher self knows what to do if the bus breaks down, gets lost. Only the higher self can take care of all the kids on the bus and keep them all safe. So we don't want the kids driving the bus. This the highest self is the self energy part, if you're familiar with IFS. The kids of the bus don't know how to drive. They're children. They're not supposed to know how to drive. They're not responsible enough to drive. They're not developmentally capable of driving. And they are still, because we know that complex PTSD creates developmental arrests, these parts are developmentally arrested in time at certain ages. Okay. So you have parts of you, like a part of you that gets triggered might actually think and feel and believe like a 9-year-old. That happens a lot. That's a kid on the bus. Okay. So, for an example, I had a client who had what she called a doom and gloom kid on her bus. The kid became a passenger on her bus when she was a kid and her mother had a miscarriage. She was 8 years old and her mother got pregnant and had a miscarriage. And as an 8-year-old, she was very, very excited to be an older sister. She did not have any sisters or siblings at that point. But her mom miscarried. And so she watched her mom spiral in depression and hopelessness and grief. And so the core beliefs that formed when this doom and gloom kid started riding the bus were nothing good ever lasts. Don't get excited when good things happen. It always comes crashing down. Just wait for the next thing to go wrong. It always does. Those were some of her core language of that kid's beliefs. So when we sat with the doom and gloom kid, we discovered that this kid came to her as a boy who was 8 years old. He was trying to protect her from getting her hopes up and then being disappointed. And so he was also trying to protect her from how she felt when her mother was unavailable to her due to her mother's depression about the miscarriage. So this is an example of due to circumstances beyond anyone's control. Because mom experienced a miscarriage and was dealing with her own emotional turmoil as a result of that, she was then emotionally unavailable to her child. So, this is a form of emotional abandonment that can't always be stopped. No matter how conscious of a parent you are, sometimes these things happen and it's really beyond your control. So, not only was this doom and gloom kid in her present day life trying to protect her from ever getting her hopes up so that she wouldn't have to feel disappointment. As a child, this kid was like, I got to protect you from mom who is now unavailable. Like, we have to figure all of this out ourselves because mom is not available to us. So, these kids on our buses exert lots of energy trying to protect us. Many of them have not gotten the message that we have self energy who can take care of us and that we don't always need protecting from hard feelings. A question that I ask almost all of my clients, when we do the bus exercise, when we're working with one of their kids, is, do you know that I grew up and became an adult? And I would say 95% of the time, the kid says, no, I did not know that. So sometimes just telling the kid, like, yeah, actually, I grew up, I became an adult, like, I'm actually pretty great. And I have the ability to take care of you now. And I'm going to take care of you now. So I don't need you to drive the bus anymore because I've got it. So, when the doom and gloom kid drove her bus, my client would get sucked into cyclical thinking, hopelessness, why even try? Basically, a freeze response in her nervous system. She would beat herself up for procrastinating. She called it laziness, but really, it was this kid trying to protect her from starting something and then being disappointed. So, that's what I want you to notice. These kids on our buses often have their own unique patterns and nervous system states. So her doom and gloom kid was like a freeze response in her nervous system. It was keeping her completely stuck and frozen with a mixture of like the brakes being pressed, so we're not doing anything, but also the gas is there because there's a desire to do something, but the kid is keeping the brakes and the gas pressed at the same time, so the car's not going nowhere anywhere, it's just spinning out. Sometimes other kids on the bus, their nervous system state will be a fight flight response. Other kids will have a depressed or shutdown or collapse response in their nervous system. Some of our kids feel immense shame, others feel immense anger or grief or disappointment or betrayal or any number of other things. So when we were able to talk to her doom and gloom kid and ask him, if you weren't spending so much energy trying to protect her from feeling disappointment and hopeful, what would you rather be doing? And the kid wanted to play at a very specific stream in the mountains of Colorado. So through visualization, which is a very powerful practice that's underutilized in my opinion, we visualized her taking him by the hand and leading him to the stream. And she reassured him through visualization and imagination that she's not trying to ignore him or get rid of him. She's just trying to bring him to a place where he can rest and play instead of taking on these adult self responsibilities like driving the bus. She promised to check on him daily, and she did for a few weeks. He was happy to be playing by the stream, and his voice wasn't banging around in her head anymore. One time, he hijacked the bus from her, and she was able to immediately realize that he was feeling unsure and unsafe, and he needed some reassurance that she was able to take care of him, and her. And she gave him that reassurance and love. She led him back to the stream, and I haven't heard since if Doom and Gloom Kid is trying to drive the bus because he hasn't resurfaced again in our sessions. So this process is completely opposite of how we are conditioned to treat ourselves. We are conditioned to pathologize these aspects of ourselves. And then when we discover that it's a younger wounded part that's trying to take over, we often want to reject that part of ourselves and believe if I could just get rid of this stupid voice in my head, I'll be okay. We don't get to get rid of the kids on the bus. We don't get to reject, we don't get to heal them by rejecting them. We heal them by integrating them. They're allowed to ride the bus, they're just not allowed to drive. They've been driving a long time and we have not gotten where we want to be because they don't know where we're going and they don't know what they're doing. So the voices in your head are not bad or wrong. They are a part of you. They're allowed to be there. We just don't want them to take over. And as much as you might want to, you cannot reject them or get rid of them. You're also not a victim to the voices in your head. And you may not have been aware of voices in your head before now, and that's okay. I at one time was also not aware that I had voices in my head. In awareness, you can notice the voice in your head and you can notice the kid who's trying to drive the bus. This requires you developing a relationship with your parts to be able to identify these different kids. So you can start to work with those kids when you identify them by asking, what are you afraid of? What are you trying to avoid? What are you trying to protect me from? What do you need to feel safe again? How, and then how can you provide that safety and attachment and attunement for that kid? You can also notice if you have the urge to ignore them or kick them off the bus. Like it's okay to have an urge to do something. But even if you tried, you couldn't get rid of them because they're a part of you. So set the intention to practice more awareness of the voice or voices in your head. You are going to learn fascinating things about yourself, lots of interesting, curious things about yourself. And this is a foundational part of your healing process, this awareness part. So, a lot of us have lived a lot of our lives being controlled by and reactive to the voices in our heads, and we've made unconscious choices over and over that don't align with what we desire or need because it comes from an unconscious place. But an unconscious choice is still a choice. And then, whenever we make that choice, we repeat the pattern, we do the opposite of what we want to, we limit ourselves, et cetera. Another voice, or maybe the same voice, then comes along and shames us. And before we know it, we're like in a spiral of all of this confusing mental overthinking shit. And it's like we know what we're doing isn't working, but because we don't understand why we do what we do, we just keep repeating it. And then repeating it makes the shame cycle repeat. So there's a way out of that. And just in case, there's a perfectionist kid on your bus right now, and their voice is loudly telling you, this is so hard. You'll never be able to get this right. Even if you are aware of the voice, you aren't strong enough to change. This has been going on too long. What if there's other kids on the bus that you never become aware of and you don't integrate them and heal them? If you have those voices in your, okay, Carrie's like rolling her eyes, so I called her out. That's fine, Carrie. You're good. So, perfectionist kids, you are not going to get this right 100% of the time. Letting you off the hook. There is no universe where you notice the voice in your head every single time and choose the opposite every single time. Can that be okay? Maybe today it's not, but I would like for you to be open to the possibility that it could be. Okay. And isn't it interesting that there is a part of you who believes you have to get this right every single time? Isn't that so curious? Isn't it interesting that you're not hearing a voice that says, it's okay if you don't get this right all the time? You're human. I wonder why we don't have that compassionate voice. Because we have to cultivate it. That's self. That's the authentic, higher, wiser, loving, trusting part of us. So, isn't it interesting? It's curiosity. You'll never figure this out. It's hard. You're too broken. Is judgment. Okay. More curiosity, less judgment. I'll never figure this out. It's too hard. I'm too broken. Does anyone know what nervous system state this is? You can guess if you want to. You can mouth it to the camera if you don't want to put it in the chat. Danielle's saying shut down. Anyone else have a guess? I have to stop sharing to look at the chat. You guys are typing it in there. Okay, I'm not seeing any chats coming through. So, the nervous system state that this is you're right, Danielle. This is collapse, immobilization, also freeze, also shut down. Freeze and immobilization are,
I'm
oh,
sharing the wrong screen.
I'm sharing the wrong screen. Sorry. I'm telling you guys, these freaking Zoom update thing, I hate it now. Okay. Yes, you are correct, Danielle. It is not possible to embody your awareness and conscious choice if your nervous system has collapsed. Not possible. Because you will collapse back into a familiar but dysfunctional pattern, a coping mechanism, shame, addiction, all talk and no action. Then you'll feel shitty about that. You'll call yourself a lazy procrastinator and whatever else. You'll collapse back into a toxic relationship. You'll collapse back into unkept promises to yourself. So, having awareness of somatic, your body's cues and sensations, your nervous system, your window of tolerance, we'll talk about that in the fourth workshop. Having awareness of the voice in your head, that's the cognitive, intellectual awareness. Having awareness of your unconscious reactions and choices, also cognitive, intellectual awareness. Having awareness of a sacred pause, which I will elaborate more on later. And having awareness of creative non-binary choice. What I mean by non-binary is it's not black and white. It's not good or bad, yes or no. Okay. There's a creativity and a spectrum available to you. This takes practice. You are not going to be an expert in embodied conscious awareness after this workshop. I am so sorry that I cannot offer you that promise after this because you are not going to be an expert. But you will be closer to being an expert by the end of Feel Without Fear. So you're only 4 months away from that. Conscious choice is an active process. It is not a passive process. So now we're moving from awareness, conscious awareness, to conscious choice. Okay. So now we're putting some action behind the doing. I mean, sorry, the action behind the being. So conscious choice is a call to action. So do you know that dissonance that you feel in your body when you're faced with the choice between what's familiar, but maybe no longer serving you, and what's new and unfamiliar, but you know it's aligned? Okay. This is what I'm talking about. This is where this conscious choice comes in. When you're in your higher self energy, it feels natural to choose what is congruent with the reality you want. There may be resistance, but you can meet that resistance. You can face the temporary discomfort, which is really just uncertainty because it's unfamiliar, because you don't have a guaranteed of an outcome. And you can stay mobilized in your body, meaning you've got to be at like fight, flight, or above to make an active conscious choice. For those of you who are not familiar with polyvagal theory, you received my workshop, Nervous System 101, as a free bonus with your purchase of this. I highly recommend you make that the first thing that you watch and get really familiar because we're going to talk about it a lot. So here is how to practice awareness of your body. how to meet yourself with love and compassion, notice curiously, and choose. So step one is awareness, the being, not the doing. So notice that you're feeling something. It can be a symptom. It can be that you're feeling anxious, frozen, sad, angry, disappointed, panicky, whatever. You might even want to say out loud, I notice that I'm feeling blank. I'm really into using intentional language. This might be something that you have to reprogram for yourself. Not, I am anxious. I notice I am feeling anxious. Okay. I am anxious makes it an identity. It creates an energetic attachment to it that you like can't undo because you are identifying with that. But you are not anxious. You are feeling anxious. Then notice somatically where that feeling lives in your body. So does anxiety live here? Does grief live here? Does anger live here? Okay, noticing where it lives in your body. And then what does it feel like? Can you describe it in detail? Does it feel hot, cold, pulsing, tingling, tense? If you close your eyes and picture it, does it come to you as a certain color, a shape, an animal? Get really familiar with that sensation. Two, offer some presence and love. If you want to describe it out loud, that can help you stay present. But I really encourage you to place a hand on the part of yourself where this sensation lives. And that hand is just your way of being, of just saying, I'm here, right? I'm here. Thank you, body, for talking to me. I'm listening. Because that's literally all your body is doing. Your body's not misbehaving. She's just talking. This part of you, whatever is feeling anywhere, is feeling unsafe and uncertain. And it's just sending you a message. The sensation is just information. It wants to be held and loved. It does not want to be judged, gotten rid of, shamed, rejected, abandoned, or fixed. Okay. It just wants your presence. It needs loving awareness, not judgment. It's probably a younger, wounded part who has not yet integrated into you and come to trust your higher self energy yet. Next, notice the stories in your head. What is the story that the voice in your head is telling about what you're feeling or what you're triggered by? Is it blaming someone else? Is it blaming you? Is it shaming you? Just noticing the story. I can't do this because whatever it is. Remember, the mind is a meaning-making machine. So what meaning is it making out of what you're feeling? Whenever I had really bad health anxiety, any new sound, sensation, whatever in my body was like alarm bells would immediately go off. Oh my God, it means I have cancer. Like that was the voice in my head. That was the story. Okay. Again, I'm a catastrophizer. If I can think of the worst possible thing that might happen and come up with a plan for it, I might be okay, right? So if I can convince myself that I have cancer, then I'll start researching cancer on the internet till 2 a.m. And then in 2 weeks, I'm a cancer expert, right? And then this is your active choice part. Make a conscious choice. Choose how you want to respond to what you're feeling. So when we get triggered, often trigger energy is very big and fast, or it's the opposite of big and fast. It's like no energy at all, because sometimes trigger means we dissociate or trigger means we suddenly feel like very exhausted. So we react instead of respond, but responsibility is the ability to respond. So how can you use your agency and your sovereignty to take care of yourself? What would the highest, wisest, most loving and trusting part of you choose? Do you need to set a boundary? Do you need to sit in that discomfort a little longer? Do you need to walk away and take a break? Do you need a nervous system CPR tool to help you get back in your window of tolerance before you can deal with the situation? You also have access to nervous system CPR as a freebie with your purchase of this course. Okay, I mentioned the sacred pause earlier, and now I'm going to talk a lot more about it. So from that moment that you become aware that you're triggered or feeling discomfort or whatever it is that you're noticing, when you notice that sensation, you're holding yourself. Before you make that choice, there is a pause. And when you're first learning this process, that pause may be so quick that you miss it. And that's okay. You're not going to get this perfect every time, but you have to repeat the pattern in order to practice the awareness. You see what I mean? You have to let yourself repeat it and not beat yourself up about it, because the repetition of that pattern is how you're going to develop your awareness of it. The pause is crucial. If you don't know when that pause happens, you are going to be more likely to react and repeat your pattern, which is not congruent with who you are anymore. That's no longer authentic, which is why you're feeling uncomfortable about it. If you are conscious during that pause, you're going to be more likely to interrupt the trigger, the whatever, the belief, the story that your mind's making up by responding in a way that supports your goal to face that thing and widen your window of tolerance to it. That's what we're going to be doing a lot in Feel Without Fear is taking that window that you have with these beliefs of like, oh my God, everything is overwhelming. I can't feel everything. It's too much. And we're going to like be gradually expanding that so that you can hold more of that stress without getting blown out. Because blown out is reactive. It's unconscious. It's animalistic. It's primal. Okay. And that's not bad. We need that. If we're faced with a threat that actually warrants that level of reaction, right? But most of us in our day-to-day lives are not faced with that level of threat, and yet our bodies still act that way to things that are not appropriate to act that way to. Okay? And that's what we're repatterning. So, awareness, we're feeling, we're holding, we're noticing, we're pausing, we're choosing. You are going to have to practice this process over and over again. And maybe there's a voice in your head that's already creating a story like, oh, why does it have to be this hard? Oh my God, there must be something wrong with me. I can't get this wrong the first try. Why do I have to practice? It's not fair. I just want to fix it. I don't want to have to practice. Okay, fine. Become aware of that. Be present with it. Hold yourself. Love yourself. Notice it. Pause. Choose. You can choose right now to walk away from this program because everything I'm telling you seems like it's too hard and you won't be able to do it perfectly. So why even try? You are absolutely allowed to make that choice. But I don't think that that's what the highest, wisest, most loving, and trusting part of you would choose. I think that's what the adaptive part of you would choose. So what if you couldn't make the wrong choice? Everyone's perfectionist was just like, what? What do you mean? Is there an objectionable voice in your head who's afraid that there's a right choice and a wrong choice? Okay, Danielle's saying yes. And that if you don't make the right choice, you're not healing. Oh my God, pull our hair out, right? Sorry, I like to be kind of dramatic sometimes. Isn't that interesting? Instant space. So healing does not mean that we make the conscious choice 100% of the time. There is no 100%. There is no metric way of measuring any of this shit. That's so unrealistic. But I know how the voices in your head work. We can be aware of perfectionism that we are unconsciously applying to the healing journey. Be curious and hold ourselves in that loving presence too. Isn't that interesting that I'm bringing perfectionism into this process? I wonder why that is. So, this also does not mean that you're required to face every trigger. Okay? I want you guys to know you are not required to face and heal fucking everything. You are allowed to be aware and give yourself loving presence and notice the voice. And your conscious choice might be to repeat a pattern or to not sit with discomfort or to zone out on your phone so you don't have to feel. 6 days before the 4th of July, if you guys read my email before that went out about Feel Without Fear, our neighbors were popping off fireworks at 11:30 in the morning, 6 days before the 4th of July. Absolutely no way we could have known or prepared or had him inside or like whatever else. David and I are outside. We're potting pepper plants, and the dogs are just outside with us, just being dogs. Well, the fireworks are going off and it sounds like gunfire and missiles. And our bearded collie, his name is Lachlan, he starts jetting behind the barn. And I caught his eye and I was like, oh no, if he hears those fireworks again, he's gonna take off. I just know he's gonna take off into the woods. So I called him, I made eye contact with him, and then the fireworks started again. And sure enough, into the woods he went. He doesn't run away, he doesn't get out of his own yard. Or go off of our property that much. He likes to go to the neighbor's yard every morning and say hi to their dog, but then he comes right back and that's just about as far as he goes. But he was gone and I didn't know where he was. And so we were walking all over the property yelling at him. I grabbed a squeaky toy. I was squeaking it. I was calling his name. I was using my happy voice so he would think I wanted to play with him. I was using all of his favorite words. David got on the four-wheeler and went and drove around the trails looking for him. He didn't come back with him. I mean, I was full on freaking panicked. Finally, David went and talked to the neighbor. They stopped popping the fireworks. They apologized. They offered to help us look for Lachlan. About 20 minutes later, Lachlan came back on his own. He was covered in mud, soaking wet. But he was okay. We got him a bath. As soon as he was dried off after his bath, he hopped right up on my bed and he went to sleep for like 2.5, 3 hours. I sat on the end of my bed. I was going to fold laundry, but instead I just pulled out my phone and I just like scrolled, like literally this posture for like an hour. And I knew I was doing it when I was doing it. I knew what I was doing. And I wasn't like, oh, you shouldn't be doing this. Oh, this is bad. You should be folding laundry instead. Oh, you shouldn't zone out on your phone. You're zoning out on your phone. This is bad. I wasn't like that. I knew it made sense because he had a fight flight experience getting scared by the fireworks. So when danger was all clear and he was back home and bathed and safe, what did his nervous system do after his fight flight experience? It collapsed. He slept for 3 hours. I was having my own fight flight experience looking for him. What did my nervous system do after he came home safe and the danger was all clear? It collapsed. So zoning out on your phone is one way that collapse shows up. And in this case, I did not need to do the opposite. I needed to let that happen so that my body could replenish the resources that I used. I mean, I walked over 5,000 steps in like 20 minutes trying to find him. Like I was worn out, and we live on the side of a hill. So I was like worn out. So this is what I'm saying. I consciously chose to let myself zone out on my phone. I was not zoning out and not aware of what I was doing. I was completely aware of what I was doing. The point is not to always choose the opposite of whatever we're doing. It's to consciously choose instead of allowing the autopilot to choose for you. So I consciously chose to dissociate on my phone for like an hour. And I did not feel shame about it. And I did not feel guilty about it. And I did not judge myself for it. I let it happen. I surrendered to it because I knew my nervous system was coming down from an activated experience, the same as my dog's nervous system was. All right. That is the end of our workshop. Our group coaching call is Wednesday at 1. If you need to write that down, we will take another 5-minute break. So come back at 15 after the hour, and then the floor is open for you to talk to me and ask any questions that you would like.